Good morning. It's Shirley Gutkowski at Crosslink Radio, and I welcome you once again to the only health show that talks about the health of the mouth as a whole package part of the health of the whole body. And I am the person to do that. I am Shirley Gutkowski, a dental hygienist who practices here in and around Madison. I have been a dental hygienist since 1986, and on and on and on. You can find out a boatload more about me if you just use Dr. Google to find out. it's been a trip, let me tell you. It's been a big, big trip. So today I thought I would tell you a couple of things about things that have happened over the last little while. The last week I went down to Chicago to visit a couple of colleagues of mine, one who I didn't know at all, one who I kind of know, and one who I have known for probably 10 years or more. But they're extremely diverse. What I intended to do was to learn more about airway and this idea of anthropology as a feature and integral component of knowing how dental history and how dentistry works and how the health of the mouth can be attained by looking backwards to move forwards. Somehow, I think we can all agree that we have separated science from history, and unless we really understand history and put the things together, cross-link them, as it were, we are missing a lot of part of the whole story here, and we can make things so much better if we put an eye backwards. One of the things that has happened is the way that we communicate today. That has changed everything dramatically. So a lot of the things that we're doing today were not possible in the past because we didn't have the kind of communication that we have today thanks to the internet. The internet brings us much more closely together with history, with science. We can have a relationship on a one-to-many basis on the history of what's been going on. So let me just kind of give you a little tiny history lesson of how I came upon this. One thing is the idea of what we call now an abfraction. If you're a patient, you may have had this term used with referring to your teeth. If you're a dentist or a dental hygienist, you may have been learning about abfractions as a, they don't want to really want to call it a diagnosis, but it is a descriptor for a notch that occurs in your tooth right where the crown of the tooth meets the root of the tooth. Nobody knows why that's there or how it got there, or why it showed up not too long ago, okay? So if you talk to the forward-thinking dentists of the 1990s, you will find that they have decided that this notch occurs because of occlusal forces. That is, that the teeth come together, put unnatural stresses on that part of the tooth, and then it just kind of microscopically breaks away. They were able to determine definitively that those notches are not an occurrence of overbrushing or using a stiff brush. What they were kind of leaning towards was toothpaste and the abrasivity of toothpaste. But that doesn't still answer a lot of questions. So then they kind of went to this idea that there were occlusal forces that kind of broke the tooth down. Almost all of them look identical. They look like a little V notch out of the tooth. What was so weird and why they eliminated or discarded the idea of toothpaste and toothbrush is often teeth that are out of alignment, that are kind of more towards the inside, say, also exhibited these kinds of anomalies. And so the toothbrush doesn't reach there. So obviously there had to be something else. And they attributed all of this to occlusal forces. Well, When I was doing my research project on polishing, I stumbled across an article written by Dr. Rella Christensen, and she found that the person in the study who wasn't able to or wasn't good at adapting the Profi cup, the little cup that we use to spin on your teeth with the gritty toothpaste there, if that cup wasn't adapted appropriately, then that would create a little notch there at the junction between the root and the crown of the tooth. So that notch there never really healed. The enamel did heal, which was my thesis at the time, that enamel doesn't heal, but it does. And so that sparked my interest in this debate on how these notches occurred in the tooth, these abfractions. And I asked Dr. Christensen if it was possible that hygienists were creating these notches and called them abfractions. And she said to me, "Oh my God, Shirley, we didn't even have the word abfraction when I did this study. It was so new." And that study was done sometime in the 1980s. And so that got me to wondering really what was going on. What I also know is that more and more hygienists are polishing more and more often, and we're using a coarse polishing paste. So if you are a patient listening to this podcast, really look and ask your hygienist if she's using coarse or extra coarse, and would she please go out and find where they're keeping the fine and ask for that fine polishing paste, or skip it altogether. So anyway, what we're doing in dental hygiene is we're polishing more patients more often. And the number one selling Profi paste, the polishing paste that we use, is called coarse. And of course, the extra coarse is the number two seller. That's a lot of courses, but I think you followed me. So we have a lot more polishing happening. We have this new phenomenon that occurred in the middle 1950s, let's say, and maybe the earlier 1900s, and we have this new notch called an abfraction on dentition. And then after or around that time, I stumbled across a discussion between a few dentists talking about the lack of archaeological proof that abfractions existed. So when you look back at skulls that still have teeth in them, and many do, you will never find an abfraction. So that got me wondering if it really was a contributor, the occlusion factor was a contributor. And so I latched my thinking onto this polishing compound problem. And so I've been going around the country talking about, you know, watch your polishing and don't polish the root of the tooth. If you have the root exposed, don't let your hygienist use a polishing compound on there, specifically if it's coarse or extra coarse. There are better options for polishing that part of the tooth. So I went down to Chicago to talk to an archaeological dentist, pediatric dentist. And his contention or his passion or his thought train is to look at the airway and what has happened to the airway using archaeological finds. So he pointed out to me that when we were, you know, even in the 1800s, we had much bigger airways starting from the back of the nose, or those holes. You know, when you look at a skull and you look at the front, it has those two kind of triangular holes there that represent the nose, where the nose had been, and that is the airway. And he showed me from the back, you could see those airways, and they are maybe the size of a quarter tops, okay? But the skulls from the 1800s had openings that were easily the size of a silver dollar. So if you think to yourself, how big is a silver dollar? I don't even know what a silver dollar is. We have the internet now, right? And you can look up the size of a silver dollar, and you will see that it is quite a bit bigger. And maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but those passages are extremely bigger in people's skulls even from the 1800s. So this phenomenon of this shrinking airway is definitely a new phenomenon, and it is an epigenetic phenomenon. It is not an evolutionary change. Last year, when I was at the American Academy for Physiological Medicine and Health meeting, my first time at that meeting, one of the speakers was talking about how he had gone to an evolutionary, I don't even know what they call an evolutionarianist, somebody that knows about evolution, and they had told him that the change that we've seen in the size of the face, specifically the face, would have taken 10,000 years of evolution to accomplish. And obviously, these changes have been happening a lot faster than that, like seriously faster. So the new doctor that I met with last week was trying to ferret that out. You can find out more about that on the internet, and that is part of the whole conversation here, that we can all learn together and use more of a mastermind or a groupthink kind of a, well, groupthink has a negative connotation, but to get a lot of minds together and start asking questions and wondering aloud how these things happened and why. So that was extremely interesting. I spent 2 hours at his office, and I saw him see a couple of patients and what they're doing in that practice. Now, he's not an orthodontist, not a, you know, classically trained orthodontist, but he does do orthodontia like almost all pediatric dentists do. And he manages the occlusion by focusing on the airway, airway-centric occlusion. So that is the term, that is the phrase, airway-centric occlusion. So when he sees a patient that is like my niece, who I just found this out last week too, whose jaw looks small and whose teeth don't fit into the jaw, instead of taking those teeth out, they increase the size of the jaw to accommodate the teeth. By increasing the size of the maxilla, the upper jaw, to accommodate the size of the teeth, what you're doing is allowing the airway to also increase. When I saw the patient a couple of weeks ago who had a fully occluded throat, right? Her tonsils were big, her tongue was high, and her uvula fit in the space between the tonsils and also closed that off because she had 4 premolars extracted. Or maybe not exactly, that's exactly why, but that was also part of her condition. And when you do that, when you remove those teeth, the soft tissue has nowhere to go. So right away you start thinking, well, the tongue is too big, so we have to trim the tongue. And I know that that surgery exists. Or that we have to take the tonsils out. Or we have to do a surgical procedure that removes all of the soft tissue in the throat to allow for increased airway passage size. And it just doesn't need to work that way. If you're looking at orthodontia for your own children or for yourself, ask around about that phrase, airway-centric orthodontia. That is the way of the future. That is what's going to keep you from having sleep apnea, that's going to keep you from dying early, and it's going to keep you from a whole host of other problems. We are now at the doorway for this kind of thinking, so the science to support this idea that you will die later because of this has yet to be confirmed. So don't let that scare you, because it's still really important information, and that you should keep all of your teeth in your head for the duration. So I'm very anxious to learn more and more about it. They also work very closely with orofacial myofunctional therapists, because they are the ones who understand how the tongue needs to have the room and how the tongue should work to maintain that room. So these airway-centric dentists will be offering, for starters and small children, arch expansion. And don't be afraid of that. This does come in stages to make sure that you're opening those arches, both of them, to accommodate the airway, which is critical. You can live without teeth, you can't live without air. So there's that. That's another good reason to be wearing your dentures in your sleep. That also needs to be addressed somewhere in this whole conversation. So after that, I hightailed it over to the other side of town, and I met with another dentist who is a scientist dentist who does a lot of research, and I'll be having him on with me in the coming weeks as well. He just received a grant or clearance for a grant to study oral bacteria in children with autism and on the autism spectrum. So I'm not sure what he's going to find based on that, but he's going to be looking to see if there is a difference. So I think that that'll be super cool to find out. I don't know what we'll do with that information because, again, it's kind of going at the traditional way of how we deal with dentistry, and now we're looking more closely at the bacteria, which is sensible. We're not looking at the oral bacteria as a feature of the entire alimentary canal, the entire feeding system, which I think may be a missing piece. I don't know what his whole design is, and it might include that, but it certainly should. And we certainly should also be including an airway kind of a piece to it. The more that I'm learning about airway, the more I'm understanding that if you don't have air, you don't have a proper systemic pH. Without a proper systemic pH, you're going to have an alteration in the oral bacteria that will get in the way of health. So if you're not wearing your CPAP, all the scraping of your gums and your teeth is not going to help at all. You need to get your airway under control so that your body can take control over what's happening, so that your body can achieve homeostasis. It can't do it when it's starved for air for 6 and 8 hours a night. So that's a really high priority item for me as I'm bringing more and more things together. I'll be having both of these doctors on as we continue on with CrossLink Radio. I really, really like doing this part of the job, and I really, really enjoy meeting up with people, and I always am interested to know what it is that you'd also like to know and if you have questions based on what I am talking about. So let's take a short breather here, and we'll be right back.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio.
And we're back, and I'd like to also reiterate to share these episodes with anyone that you know. I try to make them not super dental-centric or, you know, dental professional-centric. I'd like to have more consumers know about this stuff so that they can ask more pointed questions when they get to their dental office and demand higher care, higher level of care for their patients. So spread this around, you know, not just to your dental friends, spread it also around to your consumer friends. Anybody with teeth or with a mouth, I guess, is a little more accurate. And then that brings me, let's see, did I finish up on my second visit? He had a different outlook than the airway outlook. It was like an afterthought for him, which is fine. But he was doing some really interesting research and always does some very interesting research with respect to oral biofilm and sugars, probiotics. He's got a lot of products that he gives to his patients or sells to his patients, which is also unusual. Dentists, for some reason, don't like the idea of having their patients buy stuff from them. But it's too confusing out there. It's just too flippin' confusing. If you have a preference for this or that, or you know of a new product, or you know of a product that is only available through a dental office, it really, you need to get on board and you need to sell these products to your patients. They need to have a secure place to buy products and not have to think about it We're the professionals. We have a professional responsibility to our patients to provide them with products that are going to be helpful for them from your own, from our own, you know, research. They shouldn't have to go and figure out how much fluoride toothpaste they need, whether or not they need it. Do they need these blue flecks or not? Do they need a mouthwash? Which mouthwash should they use? They shouldn't have to be put in that position. Unless you absolutely don't care about any of this kind of stuff, then you should offer these products to your patients. We will also have that doctor on coming up on CrossLink Radio as well, so stay tuned for that. Then the last dentist was the following day. Patty DeGangi and I spent the evening working on a couple of projects that we're working on, and the following morning. And then in the afternoon for lunch, I met up with a dentist that I'd known for at least 10 years. He was the first dentist I knew who did blood testing in the office. And that is seriously the wave of the future. What he has done in his patient base with just the blood test as a guide to his treatment options is phenomenal. He has found patients that have been able to recover from their periodontal infection without any further treatment, but he has also found using the blood test that these patients have comorbidity factors that range everywhere from something, you know, annoying like gout all the way to chronic conditions like diabetes and onto acute conditions like cardiovascular disease, where they are at super high risk for having an aneurysm or something like that. So it's really critical that we start moving in that direction. I would encourage you to ask your dentist if they do blood testing. And I'm not saying that you should dump your dentist if they don't, because that's not going to work, because there are too few dental offices that do blood testing in their office. They are afraid of doing that. They are afraid they're encroaching onto medicine and that they will get in trouble with the medical boards, that it's not a dental thing. It is definitely a dental thing. If they are of the mindset that they are microcarpenters, that their only job is to work on the teeth and they weren't paying attention in school, they sat right next to the medical doctors up until the last, 2 years when they started really working on the teeth. They sat neck and neck in pre-med and pre-dental classes, and they took all the exact same courses. They know, dentists do, how the body works. And then their specialty is the teeth. So that's where that comes apart. So the dentists do know all of that, and it is in the dentist's scope of practice to know what the blood readings are and how to do blood readings. And now I'm starting to start, you're not going to believe this, now I'm starting to wonder if we don't need to do, I'm not going to say it out loud, but more testing, let's just say that, of other bodily fluids, hard and soft fluids. So let's just call it that, but we certainly do have a relationship with blood. We're up into blood all the time when we're doing extractions, when we're doing periodontal therapy, when we're working with our patients, even with just a gingivitis, and that's problematic. That's problematic that we're not. So we talked at great length. He had a company that he had to eventually fold up that did blood testing for dental practices, and they are the creators and owners of a test that was 97% correct. And up until then, it was closer to 87%. So they created a test that was infinitely more more accurate than the traditional tests that he had been doing. So I'm anticipating him to come on as well. He also has a line of supplements for oral care. And that may be where the problem comes in, that his own product is what's being offered and offered from dental practices as well. So it's that kind of thing that's really been a hurdle. He's finding what I found, you know, we're running parallel things here, is that dentists are just really afraid of doing anything that looks like medicine. They really just want to fix teeth. And if their hygienist is extremely effective, they won't have as many teeth to fix. And they may not know it, you know, on the top of their mind, but they do feel it at some level. And that can be a really big problem for the patients as well. So let's get them on board. Let's get everybody to understand that dentistry is medicine. It is it's a specialty of medicine, and it deals with the teeth, and the teeth are part of the body. They aren't just in the mouth, right? They go down into the bone. They are the only body part that we have that's to the outside and the inside. And that's something that we don't talk about very much either. We have a very intimate relationship with the body at the blood level, at the blood interface level, that's not being recognized as well as it could be. What we are finding, what they are finding, the archaeological dentists and people who are looking at everything from the get-go to today, are finding that just having a bigger, wider airway is decreasing the amount of oral biofilm that's accumulated, which goes directly towards this thing that I was telling you about with the pH. When your body's pH is low, your saliva's pH is going to be low, and that offers a really healthy environment for oral bacteria to accumulate and to thrive and grow. So there you go. That's how this whole circle works. And we need dentists who get a better awareness of that aren't focusing directly on microcarpentry, and they will be able to do more and more with their education. They won't be stuck just doing oral care and stuck just doing microcarpentry. So those are the kinds of things that that interest me, that I follow, that I look for, and that I am offering classes in, mastermind classes in, for clinical dental hygienists. I was calling it coaching, and I was calling it, I don't know, I had a couple of names, but none of them really fit as well. I was never really happy with them. None of them fit as well as the idea of a mastermind. So our mastermind groups will be 1 month long. The first one will start the first week in June, and we will be offering 1 hour and 15 minute group sessions of small groups of up to 10, preferably 8, and we'll get all of these things incorporated into the dental hygiene practice so that patients can be better and the bottom line of the practice will be better. You can't have a thriving practice unless you have patients, and patients want excellent care, and that's exactly what we're talking about. I'm not talking about doing more of a certain thing. I'm not talking about building more and more into each appointment and cramming more things in. I'm talking about a holistic approach to the practice of dental hygiene in an effort to get healthier patients, to be more comprehensive, to offer a greater mix of services, and to offer healthy bottom line in the dental hygiene practice as part of a dental practice. So those are the key features. As a clinician who is approaching their job this way, you will have a higher level of job satisfaction guaranteed, or a higher level of job dissatisfaction, and you'll find another practice to work in that can grow with you. Most dental practices of the dentists that I've spoken to, you know, not just these fancy guys, but the regular dentists, I want to just, you know, do dentistry kind of people. They want hygienists that have a mind and who are engaged. So stay tuned for more information on that, or you can contact me at crosslinkpresent@aol.com. And if you're a patient who has wonderings about the practice that you're at, or if you wonder about the treatment plan that you've been presented with, I also offer consulting for patients, and that is more of a consulting kind of a thing. I'm not going to be here to save you money unless there's money to be saved, and I am not here to sell you anything because I'm not a dentist, and I'm not seeing you as a patient, but I can certainly help you develop questions to ask and to get the answers that you need in order to find out if you need whatever treatment. I've already gone on record multiple times on this podcast about the need for periodontal therapy, and I think everybody needs it. If they told you you need it, you probably do. So have a great rest of the day. Share this episode, and we'll see you next time on Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski signing off.